Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's brand new episode of Quarkcast. I am your host, Tim.
And I'm Mikey.
This is Sile. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Before we get started, if you haven't already, do join our Discord channel. And if you're watching on YouTube, where we do this every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, do ask us questions during the episode. Without further ado, let's get to it. Tim, we were talking about like what would it be like to write on the back of like different particles, and we came across the notion of like a different candidates for unstoppable particles. We've been talking for the past few episodes about particles and special particles, like candidates for the quote unquote God's particle and also the Keystone particle. Now we can talk about like what's the most unstoppable particle. You know, Mikey, you seem eager. I'm going to throw this on to you.
Wait, what do you think we're riding on the back though? Like, does that mean that I take on the properties of that particle?
You know, it's like sitting in a car. Like, you were like sitting on the particle and like on its back and going through.
Wait, yeah. If I'm sitting on an unstoppable particle, so I would just get knocked off.
I mean, clearly it's not the most well thought out thought experiment, but.
All right, Tim, you go. Mike, he's giving me a lot of flack.
It's Einstein's thought experiment came to be because he was curious about the concept of space-time, and he wondered what it would be like to ride on a beam of light. And back in the days, I guess it's the question, what is the most unstoppable particle? Probably one of the prime answer would just be the particle of light, the photon, right? Because it travels at the speed of light. And from Einstein's theory, when something travels at the speed of light, it actually cannot slow down ever. It will always be at the speed of light. And in that sense, it is unstoppable. Like, it can never slow down. You can never catch up to it.
But you can absorb it.
Yes, indeed. It does travel at the speed of light. And you can't slow it down. But it does interact with other stuff. So to stop it or just destroy it, obliterate it, you can just grab an electron or right in front of that photon. Or you can tune the frequency. And lo and behold, that electron will happily gobble up that particle of light.
I want to take a step back and ask like a question of even though a photon is not unstoppable, you just put an electron there and it gets absorbed. What would it be like to like be a photon? What would you see if you were a photon? Like, if we're just speculating on this,
the whole universe would be a pancake.
What do you mean the whole universe would be a pancake?
It's actually a very nice analogy mathematically. So this one property of the photon is that it travels the speed of light. And it means that nothing else can catch up to you. Because the math is very similar to, let's say, when you're falling into a black hole. When you're falling into a black hole, as you fall in, the fact that you cannot escape, you know, even if you're the child at the speed of light, also means that, like, things can't really catch up to you. At the moment you fall through that event horizon, things that are outside the event horizon, you kind of lose track of them because they're almost in a different universe now. Because if they fall in, they'll never be able to escape out. So mathematically, if you look at the perspective of an observer that's moving faster and faster and approaching the speed of light, it's kind of like going into a black hole a little bit. At least the equations that work are similar. A photon in that way, the fact that nothing can catch up to it, it's kind of like if you were that photon, I think it's fair to say that it's kind of a little bit like falling through a black hole.
Yeah, definitely, right? Like when people teach special relativity, like imagine someone like flying by in a rocket ship. One of the main predictions of special relativity is that the faster that person is flying by in a rocket ship, if you were to look at them with binoculars, you would see them slowing down, like literally the passage of time for them relative to yours slows down. The speed of light is that point at which that person's motion would be slowed down so much that you wouldn't see them move ever. So they would experience, like, you know, the whole journey, like the whole evolution of the universe would occur to them in an instant amount of time. You wouldn't have time to experience anything. And that's a similar thing happens when someone falls into a black hole. You know, you do see time slowing down for them as their sense of time is slowed down by the gravitational distortion. You know, if you've seen the movie Interstellar, it's like the same idea. So, the photon experiences all of eternity in zero amount of time. And so it's applied to the universe, basically just experiences it as a pancake.
One question I have about that is if it experiences all of time, but then it like gets absorbed by an electron, like what does that mean?
Okay, so something moving at the speed of light is very difficult to like think about because it's like so far detached from our everyday experience. Mm-hmm. But there's a particle called a neutrino, which is like almost, it's like so light that it's almost always traveling at close to the speed of light. So that's like kind of a more like human kind of thing you can think about, where if you actually looked at a neutrino and if that was a person, it would always be moving so fast that it would just be like, you know, moving in super slow motion.
It would take forever for it to move. It's almost like slow mo, probably like stop motion, not even slow motion.
Yeah. I know it experiences the whole universe in like a second. Well, like a photon experiences it in zero time. And that's very difficult to imagine. We can imagine like a neutrino as kind of like, you know, bringing the mass down and seeing where it goes.
So wait, so like, would you say a neutrino is more unstoppable than a photon?
It depends on what you mean. Normally, I would say no, because neutrinos, even though its mass is really light, it still could potentially get trapped. Like a really massive star or something, like you could trap certain neutrinos. And in fact, we have detected neutrinos on Earth with different type of telescope, like Ice Cube, for example. It just hunks and hunks, giant hunks of ice on the, is it the South Pole or the North Pole? I forgot.
One of the poles. 50% chance.
No, I think it's the South.
Is it the South? Maybe, yeah. But anyway, basically, with that, with enough material, the neutrinos hit the Earth, go to the atmosphere. And most of them just pass through the Earth. But sometimes, especially some of the more energetic one, could just hit some water molecules and all that, and just like splatter and just cause a lot of disruption. So neutrinos, you know, they do. We could stop them, and we have stopped them before. They're not
different though, because you can give neutrinos names. You can say like that one's Fred and that one's Bill, and you can keep track of it, right? Because they have a mass, so they have some. It's not like this like droplet of water hitting into the ocean, and now you can't keep track of it. Does that matter when you're talking about unstoppability, that you can name it?
Well, neutrino is a type of matter particle, and we described before. It's a type of what we call fermion. And it means that it's harder to stack them on top of each other. Although you could, but it's just a little harder.
It's easier to distinguish them apart.
Yeah, so there's a clearer distinction. You can more easily and clearly name them. But still, they're still born from the same quantum field, and ultimately all neutrinos are basically one and the same. They're not necessarily distinct. Practically, they're a little bit easier to name, I guess.
They have a certain sense of independence, but...
I guess, okay, so coming back to the original question that we asked, what's the most unstoppable particle? If it's not the photon and it's not neutrino, and like what would it be is my question. Tim, look, anticipatory.
I mean, we thought about this. We really did. We really thought about this. I think there are a few criteria. First, probably it should move at the speed of light. I mean, we can argue about this a little bit later. Like, things that move at the speed of light truly move at the speed of light. They cannot be slowed down. So that's like, that's pretty unstoppable, right? So if you would limit yourself to moving at the speed of light, then we have a few limited candidates. And at the same time, it needs to be that you can't just consume them that readily. I mean, it's not quite stopping them. Like the particle of light, it's a pretty good candidate, but yeah, most ordinary matter will be able to absorb them and pretty much stop them, right? Like a mirror bouncing around. So now, with that in mind, there's pretty much only one candidate, and that is the graviton. It's like the equivalent of particle of light, but it's a particle of gravity. Mm. And that, I think, satisfied those criteria, and I think... Maybe it has earned the spot as the most unstoppable particle. I don't know.
Hang on a sec. Wait. I want to challenge that. Hold on a sec. Like, so everything that has mass, I remember from high school physics, has gravity. And so, wouldn't it interact with everything? And so, versus, photons only interact with things that are charged. What's your rebuttal to this question?
So there's a bit of a distinction between a graviton or the gravitational field that, I mean, although this is a distinction that we didn't make so clear.
It's a very subtle distinction, especially when you talk about mass particles.
Yeah, it's a very subtle distinction. It's almost like It's almost like comparing a droplet of water to a bucket of water. I mean, clearly, the gravitational force and the gravitational particle, the graviton, it's all born of the same thing, the gravitational field and all the space-time itself, right? So it's an artificial distinction to separate the two. But nonetheless, we still do in particle physics. So the gravitational force that we feel, more or less, like the fact that we are attracted to the Earth, it's from a gravitational field. There's not enough jiggling, basically. It's a static gravitational field. We just constantly feel it. You don't feel it undulating, like up and down, you know, squeezing, attracting. You don't feel that. So if we limit ourselves to that discussion, then yeah. So even though you feel kind of the gravity of the Earth, you're not going to quite feel that way when you have a graviton traveling by.
Is this distinction... So this is reminding me of electromagnetism, where like if you have an electron or a proton or some kind of charged particle, it's just, you know, just there sitting, not moving. It's emanating this like electric field. But if you like actually accelerate and it's like moving and jiggling around, it will actually radiate out photons. Is that sort of like the analogy in this case?
We're saying exactly like what we're saying with like with photons. You can't name them because there's really like the bucket of water. You can smash the bucket of water and a drop can come out and you can say, oh, that's a photon. The graviton is even more like that. It's like 1,000 times even more like that.
What do you mean 1,000 times more like that?
Gravitons. So those are the hardest particles to name.
What makes them hard? Wait, what? I'm confused. Are they all over the place?
Well, the thing is, like what someone's saying, like this, like if you have just a static electric field, right? We wouldn't say that there are photons shooting back and forth. That's more like the ocean, right? There's like this ocean around us, and the ocean is a better description than like a particle. Much like the way like you shouldn't describe the ocean as like a billion droplets, right? Like that'll be a very difficult way to describe the ocean. But if you can actually excite it enough to create a photon, as you were saying, then you can give it a name for at least a few seconds or something. But to do that with a graviton, to actually like push a graviton out of the soup so you can give it a name, that's we'll never do that.
Wait, hang on a second. I want to understand this a bit better. I mean, I understand the practicality of not like describing an ocean with the droplets, but you know, from my understanding, it's made up of droplets. So what, like, yeah, you might not be able to like pull one out, but isn't the gravitational field made up of gravitons?
But I think the key thing is propagating, whether a particle can move from point A to point B and do something. Mm-hmm. Like the static gravitational field and electric field, they can't do that. I mean, they cause objects to move, but they don't have this notion that something travels from point A to B. In order for that to happen, you got to have these undulating disturbances, you know, that goes up and down like a particle of light. And that's the particle physics distinction. That's the difference between a particle and a static field. I mean, of course, you're right to object that, oh, that seems to be such a... It's just an artificial distinction. And that's true. That's true. It's just a way we describe the universe.
Well, I mean, actually, wait, can I think about it this way, though, Tim? Like, I'm only not so sure this is thinking out loud here, but like, right, if you have a massless particle, then the energy of that particle is determined by its wavelength, right?
Yeah.
And if you stretch out its wavelength to be like so large that it basically has zero energy, can you really say that it exists? And like its energy can be so low that it's like,
yeah,
basically like stretch it out of existence if you wanted to.
Yeah. And I mean, so that's the thing about massless particles, because you can continuously stretch. You can continuously stretch out the wavelength of a particle to the extent that its energy keeps going down and down and down and eventually becomes like a static gravitational or electric field. That's why this becomes even murkier, because there's a continuous deformation from one to the other.
When you say continuous deformation, are you talking about like, imagine I had like a wave-like structure and I were just stretch that out continuously and it becomes flat?
So I can master particles. I see the like, it's kind of like the all or nothing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you get enough energy to create it, it's stable for whatever reason, and that's the energy, and it's like a hard step from not existing to existing. With photons, you can continuously, you know, existence is very continuous. for photons.
Yes.
So you can't do this with, like, let's say an electron. You can't, like, stretch out an electron until it's, like, flat.
There's a bare minimum you cannot go below, and that's the mass of the electron.
Very interesting. Really interesting. So for things like photons and gravitons, you can stretch them out until, like, they're basically nothing.
If you have a step, you can say, okay, when it goes up the step, I'm going to call that Fred. But if it's, like, you know, like a hill, and it's like, oh, when, okay, I can kind of name it. If it's top of the hill, I can call it, like, you know, Thomas or something. But then at what point does it stop being Thomas? It's not really clear.
Okay. One question that one of the listeners asked me in preparation for this episode is the graviton an actual particle? Like the gravity waves have been discovered, but are we so sure that a graviton actually exists?
Pretty darn sure, I would say. I mean,
in a sense, it's like almost by definition, right?
Yeah, I would say it's almost as legitimate of a particle as the particle of light, right? We detect the gravitational wave, and you can think of that as a massive surge of gravitons all at a similar frequency passing through Earth, and we absorb a handful of them. So we did stop quite a handful, and we saw this undulation of a massive, massive, massive gravitational wave detector that, you know, I think it jiggled it by the width of a few human hairs or something over a few kilometers, which is incredible. And we discover black holes merger from that discovery. So I would say the fact that we saw undulating gravitational field is pretty much proof for the graviton, I would say.
What the person means, though, is like, could you ever give a graviton a name? Like, could you ever excite one and give it so much energy? Like, could you ever prove that you can do that? I guess that's a pretty tall order.
And I would say theoretically maybe possible, but yeah, this is the problem that makes it so unstoppable, because the interaction is so small that individual graviton will probably never detect. They have to come in enormous tsunamis, like gravitational tsunamis, right? That's what we need. In order for us to have even a tiny, tiny chance to absorb a few of them and then, like, claim a discovery. And that's what makes it so unstoppable. It's just really hard to track down these guys and stop them in their tracks.
Could you also make that argument for, like, the static electric field? With these photons that have been, like, stretched out so much that they're basically almost non-existent?
I think the difference is that, like, since we're beings of electromagnetism, we can, like, pick a hammer and just smash the field and photons will just fly out. Yeah, but you can't do that with the gravitational field. We don't know any kind of hammer that can...
Let's clarify a little bit. I mean, you could make gravitons quite easily. Like, just us moving around, we're making gravitons. But those have so little energy... They're so basically so stretched out, they might as well not exist. So it's not fair to say that they're real particles, right? Because there's this ambiguity, right? Like, at what level do we say that these gravitons exist, right? You have to have some threshold. You gotta have some bar. The bar might be low, but, like, you know, for us moving around, these are like wimpy gravitons.
I guess one thing I want to understand that we've been talking about is, like, with the static field, like, if I imagine a wave just, like, stretched out and then you cause a little bit of disturbance and there's a little bit of, like, a hump in this wave, but it's, like, mostly flat. Are you referring to, like, the ability to name a particle in that way as, like, you have, like, a larger peak in which it's, like, definitively separates itself from, like, the rest of the thing, like, a disturbance? Okay.
Yeah, no, so, like, literally, like, there becomes a certain point when a photon has so low energy. Like, is this a million photons, each with, like, this amount of energy? Or is it a million and one with, like, each one with a slightly less amount of, like, the distinction becomes completely, I think it's literally ambiguous.
I see. So we're talking about, if we were to generate gravitons, they interact really weakly. Like, is there any reason as to why speculative or, like, definitive? Like, why gravity is so weak?
Let me just be a magical puzzle.
Didn't have to be so weak. And normally we would expect gravity to not be that unstoppable. We would expect graviton to behave similarly to the particle of light. You know, if you grab any object, their gravitational interaction would just stop it, right? Maybe like Interstellar, you know, if you watch the movie, the one is spoilers, but imagine if we live in a world where gravity is highly dominant, we just have communication devices that uses gravitational interactions, right? We'll absorb and emit gravitons all the time. Although, like in this world that we live in, it just so happens that it's so weak. And pretty much the only way to really guarantee a stop for graviton is just black holes. There's basically no other thing. And black hole stops everything, obviously. Like, it's not just...
Literally, the question of why gravity is so weak has been the number one. People have lived and died, just dedicating themselves to making any amount of progress on this, and there's been none.
So I'm guessing you two are up for it. So I wanted to ask a question. I don't know, maybe this is a bit of a more complicated question, but can a graviton escape a black hole? Or like, how does that work? Like gravitons and black holes.
So what makes a black hole is because the gravitational field around it. And like we mentioned before, graviton is the excitation of the gravitational field. So it's almost like when a graviton falls in a black hole, it's literally like you have a drop of water dropping into a massive whirlpool of like water in it. So to what extent did the graviton made it? That, I mean, it's a little ambiguous, right? Like, where's the graviton? But of course, if you follow that undulation, I think, will follow the same behavior, because once it falls through the horizon, the space-time is going to stretch so fast that undulation will never get like deflected out, right? So it cannot escape just like particles of light. But then again, it's more like, it's not really like the graviton fall into the black hole. It's more like it merged with the black hole. It joined it, basically.
Right.
That's more apt description, yeah.
Yeah. If I were to like, I don't know, this is a weird science fiction experiment. If I could like generate gravitons more easily and I fired enough of them at each other, could I form a black hole? Just only gravitons. Like graviton hitting graviton.
Wait, no. If you had enough energy to create a graviton that you can measure, wouldn't that be a black hole?
Oh, correct.
Graviton is just undulation of gravitational field. If those undulations get really large, yeah, you're going to make a black hole.
But you can't really make one, actually.
We just wouldn't call that graviton, right? It's not an object made out of gravitational field.
So I also want to reconcile one thing. So in like Einstein's theory of relativity, like gravity is space-time. So what does it mean for like, and the graviton is gravity? So like, what does it mean for the graviton to like be space-time versus any other particle? Like what does that entail? It seems to have a very special place compared to other particles.
Once again, it is a bit of an artificial distinction, right? Like, for example, if we have perfect math knowledge, we don't need to separate space-time and their undulation, right? It's because our math is a little bit limited. And also it's because physics aims to describe real life phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And in real life phenomenon, we see like discrete units of particles that exist, particles of light and whatnot. And that's probably what happens with gravity as well. And that's why we have this separation. Be like, hey, when we do mathematical calculation, let's look at the bulk of gravity, or think of it as the default. And any extra undulation, we'll call that the graviton, right? So Einstein's theory, you can think of that, you can think of it as the theory of this fixed kind of like background of space-time, right? Mm-hmm. And then the extra little wiggles, we can separate it out, even though Einstein's theory still applies. We can separate it out and we can think of them as particles and, of course, add quantum physics to it.
There.
Wait, could you make a graviton that's strong enough to name without making a black hole?
I think that will require a theory of quantum gravity, and that's if you don't have.
if I wanted to... Like, if I literally wanted to just build a particle collider so strong that it could make gravitons, then that particle collider would also inevitably make black holes, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Like, basically, you make particles. You could interpret the events this way. Let's say particles... Let's say you collide particles and they create gravitons, right? The interpretation is that you make particles, those particles create black holes, the black holes merge, and they create gravitons, and the gravitons may, black holes may evaporate, creating other particles.
You're making a black hole binary system that...
Right, it's a quantum mechanical microscopic black hole, so they're not really like conventional black holes, but that's a way of viewing it.
Yeah. So I guess like we're almost at time, and I guess one question that I had. So gravitons, would you say they're unstoppable in the sense that they propagate forward because like they interact so weakly with everything, so they don't even get phased?
Yeah, exactly. And they travel at the speed of light, so it's pretty much hopeless for you to stop a graviton. It'll just pass right through you.
Unless I'm a black hole.
Unless, yeah, but the black hole stops everything, so you can't fault.
No, but the question is, can you really call that a graviton?
Are you arguing, Mikey, that we haven't discovered the graviton because we can't name it yet?
I'm not sure. It's like...
I mean, there's a bit of a contention, right? Like, we haven't discovered graviton in the same way we have discovered photons. Because photons have, like, you know, to call something ton, right? Usually... implied in this word is that there is a particle-like behavior, and usually there's quantum mechanics in it, right? The fact that photons have these discrete, you can kind of label them individual particles because of these quantum mechanical nature. So in that way, yeah, we really have not examined the quantum mechanical nature of gravitational waves, and we probably will never do that in our lifetime because in the index so weakly. But I feel like for all intents and purposes, like, we know that they're there, but we just haven't quite, you know, label those particles. We just haven't quite captured them in fact and be like, look, we got a graviton. Like, we haven't done that.
It's a really weird question. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll save this for the closing arguments. But...
All right. Let's get to the closing arguments.
I don't know if you can consider the graviton to even be a particle, if I think about it. We can think of the photon as a particle because it's possible to give enough energy to one in order for it to just distinguish itself from the others and kind of separate it out and give it a name. In some like human theoretical construction, you can do the same thing with a graviton if you ignore the complications that would come from the fact that it would just make a black hole. And then what happens then? I don't know enough, too rusty to be able to work that out, but there are like real barriers to being able to do that, at least in our universe. And so the person who asks whether or not the graviton can be proven to exist, it's almost like not even about proving that it exists, but there is like a continuum between a construct, like something that you just like use as like a, you know, a construct for it to explain things, and then if it actually interacts enough to be able to give it, you know, its own life, then you can say it actually exists. But the fine line between existence and non-existence, I don't know. I think the graviton kind of rides that line, like a hairpin, like as close as you can get.
But that's because one of his characters, right? It is in some way unstoppable. I mean, whether we like that as a real particle, I think that's maybe a separate story. Yeah, we'll probably never find it really confirmed that it exists in the same way we confirm other particles exist. For the graviton, but it only stands to infer that if, like, theoretically, if all the particles that are born from field have that property that you can pick one out and study it, it only stands to make sense that we can do the same with graviton. And I think the fact that we detect gravitational waves, even though not gravitons exactly, only strengthens the case that, like, these fluctuations exist, and they are out in the universe, and these are some of the greatest messenger in the world, right? Because they see everything, they can travel very far, although they're really faint signals. So understanding these objects can really help us, has already helped us a lot in understanding the cosmos and some of these black hole mergers events, which is super interesting.
But I don't know if we can talk about them as individuals.
But in some ways, they are unstoppable. But I think in that way, we have managed to stop a few of them. And that's how we detected black hole mergers. So,
but you can never stop one of them. You can always stop a whole group of them.
A small fraction of a whole group. And by chance. Only by chance.
But you can never just catch one. Like, maybe even in principle, it would be impossible to just catch one. They travel in groups.
So there is no strength in numbers for gravitons.
I mean, I guess there is only strength in numbers for gravity.
It is only strength, yeah. One doesn't do that much, I guess.
Mikey, I wanted to ask you something, put you on the spot. You said a few, like, probably several episodes back that if you ever, like, could be a graviton or sit on the back of a graviton, ignoring the initial comment that you're made of particles that could be stopped, that you'd see all the secrets of the universe. Like, what does that mean? Like, it sounds to me like you actually rode on the back of a graviton.
The only thing I can imagine that I could have been referring to is I like this idea that maybe dark matter, like, there, maybe the universe is filled with particles that, like, they don't interact with anything electromagnetic, and so they pass right through us, but they talk to gravity and we talk to gravity. So if there is this completely disconnected part of reality from us, the only way you could communicate with them would be through gravity, just like Interstellar. So that must have been what I meant. Yeah. The fact that, like, it possibly let you into this, like, whole dark hidden world that could exist, like, right next to us.
Wow. All right. I'm gonna try to learn how to communicate with gravity now. All right, then, everyone. I want to thank you for joining us, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.